Well, happy Sabbath. Welcome to any guests we have. It's good to see the new ABC faces out there. I realize you've been here a couple of weeks now, but still good to see you. Have you ever won anything? Specifically, have you ever won at anything? Hopefully you've won at something. Maybe you were in sports at some point and you or the team that you were on, you won at something. Maybe you've competed in some other competition. My kids are in robotics. They have competitions. Occasionally they win. If none of those are familiar to you, right? Some of us have not won at things personally, perhaps. Maybe you've followed a team. Maybe you've got somebody that you watch and you've experienced a win, right? Maybe you've gone down to a Reds game here and I mean, the odds aren't good that you saw a win, but maybe there was a win. I was raised out in Southern California, but my dad actually grew up in Cleveland, and so he was raised a Browns fan. And if you're a Browns fan, I'm sorry, but you know what it's like if you've ever watched a Browns game and they actually win, right? It's a very exciting thing, right? I want you to sort of harness that feeling of a win, of like seeing your team win, being a part of a win, right? Seeing somebody who you love on a team and they win. Okay, imagine that feeling. I just sort of want you to harness and capture that a little bit. So you turn over to John chapter 16. John chapter 16. Here at the very end of John 16, verse 33. We're really just going to look at the last half of this verse today. So, some context here, right? We're in the book of John, right? This is part of the section that we read on Passover. This is a section where Jesus Christ is here on what's going to be the hardest night of his life, right? It's a pretty heavy, pretty intense moment. And he's in the thick of giving his like final words to his disciples before he's going to be betrayed, before he's going to suffer and die. And he knows that all of that is right in front of him. And here he has some words for his disciples. And in the middle of this, here in verse 33, he says, "These things I've spoken to you, that in me you may have peace." He says, "In the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world." Be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. He tells them something that is very certain, that we can all identify with. He says, "In the world you will have tribulation." That word tribulation, that's the same word that he uses in Matthew 24 when he talks about there being a great tribulation, a time that nobody has ever seen before or will ever see after. But it can also mean smaller tribulations, troubles, afflictions, challenges, trials, anguish, on a smaller scale. Because he says that life here in this world will bring tribulation. And that's not just uniquely Christian. That's just a part of living in this world. Being in this world means tribulation. There's anguish. There's struggle. It's a part of life, right? That's something that all of us have seen, all of us have encountered, right? From the time that we're little, we face challenges and we see tribulation in some form. And so he says here to them, he tells them that in the world, you will have tribulation. Now, maybe that's particularly true for Christians, that we will see tribulation of a different sort because we're not really a part of this world, right? We are something else that's really opposed to the way that this world is going, right? We're sort of swimming upstream in a way. So we're going to see a particular type of tribulation that maybe the rest of the world does not. But just living in this world means there's tribulation, there's anguish, there's trial. That's a part of it. He affirms that. In the world, you will have tribulation. But, right, he has a second part of that. But be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. I want you to consider, though, when he says that, he says, be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. I want you to think of how ridiculous that would be coming from anybody else except for Jesus Christ, right? If I tell you, hey, be of good cheer because I've overcome the world, you'd say, well, I'm happy for you, right? In 2 Timothy, if we go over there, 2 Timothy 4, and verse 7. Here Paul is writing to Timothy, and he tells him sort of a similar thing, right? I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. And finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day. Paul is essentially saying, I have overcome. And if you're Timothy and you're reading that, or if you're us and you're reading that, you can say, that's really good. I'm happy for you, Paul. But that has no bearing on my outcome, right? It doesn't, right? My overcoming, maybe it's encouraging for other people to see when others overcome, right? But it has no bearing on your outcome. When we talk about where we ultimately get to, right? Each of us are running our own race. But Jesus Christ, he says this, he says, be of good cheer because I've overcome the world. He can say that because his outcome has a bearing on our outcome in a way that nobody else could. Right? He says, I've overcome, I've won. His outcome has a bearing on our outcome, has a bearing on your outcome, and that it's supposed to do something. That's supposed to produce some fruit. Notice when he says this, when he says, I've overcome the world, he's still in the middle of that night. He actually has, the hardest stuff is still ahead of him, right? It's still in front of him. He knows it's in front of him, and he even prays later, God, if there's any way that I can get out of this, that would be fine, right? But there wasn't. So he knows that's ahead of him, and yet he still talks as though he's already won. That's how he frames it. When he's talking to them, he says he's already won, right? He hadn't accomplished this yet, but he knew he was about to. If you go back to John, flip a few pages back. If you're in John chapter 14, in verse 30, Jesus makes this little statement. He says, I'll no longer talk much with you, for the ruler of this world is coming, and he has nothing in me. He knew Satan had nothing on him. Satan couldn't win. And so when he tells them, I've overcome the world, he's talking about what he's about to accomplish, but he's talking about it as though it's already done, as though it's already happened. Right? He has the confidence that comes from victory. Right? When you think about winning, you think about that feeling, that confidence that comes from victory, that confidence that comes from winning, he already had that. He knew that the win was already done for. He knew what he had to do, but he knew the victory was assured. So he tells them, be of good cheer. Be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. When he tells him to be of good cheer, this is not a new thing. If you go back and you look, this is something that Jesus Christ said to people frequently. When that paralytic was lowered down through his roof, right, the first thing that he says to that paralytic before he heals him is, be of good cheer. Your sins are forgiven you. When he's walking through a crowd and he's on his way to go heal someone, and that woman touches touches his garment, and he feels power go out from him. He turns to her and he says, "Be of good cheer, daughter. Your faith has made you well." When he's walking on the sea and his disciples are terrified because they think they're seeing a ghost, he says, "Be of good cheer. It is I. Do not be afraid." In the book of Acts, Acts 23, Paul's in prison. He's in jail. There are people coming for his life. He doesn't know what's going on. And Jesus Christ appears to him and says, "Be of good cheer, Paul." He gives this encouragement regularly. So here on this night, this wasn't something new that he was saying. He was telling them a thing that he would regularly tell people, "Be of good cheer." When he says, "Be of good cheer," it's not, you know, if somebody tells you, "Be of good cheer," right, you might think, "Oh, I'm going to show up and put my happy face on, and I'll just be cheerful and smiley," right? And that's not the intent of what he's saying. It's that confidence that comes from knowing that you've won. When you think about that feeling of winning, right? When you think about that joy that comes from watching your team win, from being a part of a victory of some sort, that's the good cheer, right? Sometimes it means smiles and celebrations, right? But often it's just a confidence that you can move forward. That's what that good cheer is. It means to be courageous. It means to be confident. Be able to stand up tall and face whatever you need to face. If you've been baptized, then you participated in the thing that he was about to go through, right? He suffered and died, and then he was risen, right? Your baptism is you participating in that. Right? You're being a part of that, right? You are buried with him, we're told. Right? And then we come up out of that, and we rise, and we have this newness of life so that we can walk as he walked. We participate in that going down and coming back up, participating in his resurrection. That's participating in his win, in his victory. Right? So in that sense, he says, you've already won. When we participate in that victory, right? When we are walking with him and continue in our walk with him, we should be able to walk with confidence. There is tribulation in this world. There is. But as we walk with him, we can walk confidently, knowing that we are going to participate in his win. He's already won. He won. He accomplished it. He's victorious. And he wants us to think of ourselves in that same way, in the same way that he could say, before it happened, "I have overcome the world." He wants us to be able to confidently say, "I've overcome." Right? To think of ourselves as having already won. And then go out. Stick with him. Walk with him, walk as he walked, and be of good cheer.